ప్రత్యక్ష కృష్ణే వహి శ్రీకృతోసి మయానాథ ముక్త్యర్థం భవ సాగరే మనోరథే మదీయోయం సఫలా సర్వదా త్వయా నిర్విఘ్నేనైవ కర్తవ్యం దాసోహం తవ కేశవాం భవే భవే యథా భక్తి పాదయోస్తవ జాయతే తథా కురుష్వ దేవేశ నాదస్వం యద ప్రభవ నామ సంకీర్తనం యస్య సర్వభావ ప్రణాశనం ప్రణామో దుఃఖశమనం తం నమామి హరిం పరం జన్మాద్యస్య యదోన్వయాదిదరద చార్తేష్వభిజ్ఞస్వర తేనే బ్రహ్మ కృత యా ఆదికవయే ముహ్యం దియల్ సూరయ తేజో వాహి మృదం యథా వినయో యత్ర త్రిసర్గో మృష ధామ్నా స్వేన సదా నిరస్త కుభగం సత్యం పరం ధీమహి ధర్మ ప్రోచిత కైదవోత్ర పరమో నిర్మల్సరాణాం సదా వేద్యం వాస్తవమత్ర వస్తు శివదం తావత్రయోన్మూలనం శ్రీమల్ భాగవతే మహాముని కృతే కిమాపరే ఈశ్వర సద్యో హృద్యవరుద్యదేత్ర కృద్భిశుశ్రూషుభీ తల్క్షణాల్ నిగమగల్పతరో గలిదం ఫలం శుభముఖాదమృతద్రవ సంయుతం పిబద భాగవతం రసమాలయం ముహురహో రసికా భువి భావుకా సచిదానందరూపాయ విశ్వోత్పత్త్యాదిహేతవే తాపత్రయ వినాశాయ శ్రీకృష్ణాయ వయం నమః యం ప్రవ్రజందం అనువేదం అభేదకృత్యం ద్వైపాయనో విరహకాతరమాంజుభావ పుత్రేది తన్మయతయా తరగోభినీదుతం సర్వభూతహృదయం మునిం ఆనదోస్మి యస్వానుభావమఖిల శ్రుతిసారమేకం అధ్యాత్మదీపం అదితిదీర్షదాంతమోంధం సంసారిణాం కరుణయాః పురాణగుహ్యం తం వ్యాససూనుం ఉపయామి గురుం మునీనాం నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తతో జయముదీరయేల్ కమనీయ కిశోర ముగ్ధమూర్తే కలవేణుకునితాదృగాననేందోః మమ వాజి విజంభదాంబురేర్ మధురిం కణికాభికాభికావి నమః ఓం విష్ణుపదాయ కృష్ణప్రస్థాయ భూదలే శ్రీమతి భక్తివేదాంత స్వామిన్ ఇది నామినే నమస్తే సరస్వతీదేవి గౌరవాణి ప్రచారిణి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది పాశ్చాత్య దేశధారిణి శ్రీమల్ గురుచరణారవిందాభ్యాం నమః వందే నందవ్రజ స్త్రీణాం పాదరేణుమభీష్ణశ వ్యాసం హరిగదోద్గీతం పునాది భువనత్రయం గోపీచరణారవిందపరమాణవే నమః పీతాంబరం కరవిరాజితచక్రశంఖకౌమోదకీ సరసిజం కరుణాసముద్రం రాధాసహాయం అతిసుందరమందహాసం వాదాలయేశమనిషం హృది భావయామి ఓం శ్రీకృష్ణాయ నమః. సో వి వర్ డిస్కసింగ్ లాస్ట్ వీక్ ఫ్రమ్ ది థర్డ్ క్యాంటో ఆఫ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం వేర్ ది Devahuti Devi, Kardama Prajapati's wife, after the husband left home, that is Kardama Prajapati left home, she was staying on her own, and her son, Kapila Vasudev, is Lord Kapila, was present at home to look after her. This was the scene where we left last week. in the Srimad Bhagavatam, from now on, from this is the chapter 25, it begins at chapter 25 now in the third canto, right up to end of the third canto, which is the chapter 33. These nine chapters have a very special importance in the sense that all the great commentators on Srimad Bhagavatam, they have taken this particular instructions from Lord Kapila to Devahuti Devi as the topmost instructions on the process of bhakti. How bhakti margam, or the process what we are trying to follow today, has been technically explained by Kapila. It's the first time in the Srimad Bhagavatam the process of bhakti is explained in a very technical way, technically in the sense that everything what Krishna has spoken, whether it is in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, everything is based on logic. Nothing is sentimental or nothing is based on any whimsical facts or just to encourage people to engage in spiritual life purely based on any purely based on any sentimental values, but rather based on logic and reasoning. Everything what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Srimad Bhagavatam is purely based on logic and reasoning. There is nothing you can find. Krishna presented this philosophy, the process of Krishna consciousness, through Kapila Vasudev in the early days Satyuga or Kulayugam, so that people understand that there is a process of Bhakti Yoga present there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have to keep that in mind, because these chapters are so important. In the Bhagavatam it is so well known, and it has been studied and analyzed and discussed and commented by so many great acharyas in the past, that this is known, this is known very well as the all over in the among the devotees of Srimad Bhagavatam as Kapilam, because it has come from Kapila Maharshi or Kapila Muni. That is how it has become Kapilam. So Kapila Vasudev's mother Devahuti Devi, who was put into a very difficult situation, because a few days back only that her husband Kardama Prajapati went to her son Devahuti Devi and her son Kapila Maharshi, Kapila Vasudev, and asked him what he should do now about his sannyasam, about sannyasashram. And Kapila Vasudev told Kardama Prajapati that he should take sannyas and leave home, because if one day later on, sometime in the future, if either in his mind or in his mother's, that is Kardama Prajapati's mind, if even a simple desire for sense gratification develops in the heart, that is going to cause problems. So just to escape from that he was instructed, Kapila Vasudev told Kardama Prajapati that he should leave home and go to the forest. And that is how Kardama Prajapati was given the final clearance or final approval by Lord Kapila, Krishna, who is in the form of Lord Kapila there, eventually to leave home and to go. And it is a very interesting aspect here that you are taking sannyas to find the Supreme Lord, but on the other hand, what do you find here? You are leaving the Supreme Lord who is present at home and then going to forest looking for the Supreme Lord, which is just a dilemma which was going through Kardama Prajapati's mind. So it was then that Devahuti Devi wanted Kardama Prajapati to stay at home, but Kapila Vasudev told Kardama Prajapati that you should leave home and go to the forest, because if sometime in the future, if a desire for any one of the material sense gratification comes in, then that is going to cause problems for him. It could cause another birth again for another body. So Kardama Prajapati was instructed to leave home and go. And that's how he left and went to the forest. Dakshini krityadam prido vanameva jatamaham. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to this, Sri Shukan says to Parikshit Maharaj, Dakshini krityadam prido vanameva jatamaham. That the travelling to that forest, very happily leaving all this family and relationship and attachments, and he, Kardama Prajapati, went to the forest, performed penances, and went back to the spiritual world. That is how we stopped last time. So Devahuti Devi then approached one day was waiting. She was in a difficult situation. The children were all married and gone away. The husband has left home. All what is left now is herself and her son Kapila at home. So one day the thought occurred to her mind that what's going on in my life? This life is not the right way to live. I had so many years of happy married life with my husband. And after all that has happened now, the husband has gone away. The children have left home. And now I am in this situation at home. She was feeling lonely at the same time. She was also reflecting on her own life. This is necessary. One should reflect on one's own life and try to understand from life what is one learned from this life. It is absolutely all the thoughtful people will think like that. What have I done in this life? After all, by Krishna's grace, we have a material body and we have also been given a senses and intelligence to think and to act properly. But if we waste that in sense gratification, that is not the right way to live. That's what Krishna says. So, Devahuni Devi thought at that moment that what is going on in my life, and at that time she went to Kapila Maharshi or Kapila Vasudev and told him that put her this question to him, which no mother has asked any time before in the past. That is the most interesting. Never in the history you have heard a mother asking her son and putting a question like this. Nor it will ever happen that such a thing will happen in any other person's life. Because Devahuti Devi was a very intelligent lady. And she had a upbringing along with Kamala Prajapati on the spiritual direction of life. So she said to Kapila Vasudev and went up to him and told him openly. She opened her mind and revealed herself to him. She told him, Nurvinna nidaram bhuman asadindriya darshanal yena sambhavyamanena prapannandham tamaprabhom. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shishukan says to Parikshit that this way, when she put this question to Kapila Vasudev, Kapila Maharshi looked at Devahuti Devi and tried to understand, read her mind very clearly. This is the first time somebody has asked a question like this. Nurvinna nidaram bhuman asad indriya darshanal. Then, my dear son, first accept it is her son, so she is addressing him as the son. At the same time, she is aware that he is also the personality of Godhead, present there in her house. So she told him, Nurvinna nidaram bhuman asad indriya darshanal. That, my dear son, I have a very, very important message to you. That I am completely disgusted with this way of life, what I have been leading. Asad indriya darshanal. That indriya darshanal, that means I have been trying to satisfy my senses all along. But what was the result? Yena sambhavyamanena prapannandham tamaprabhom. The result was that what is happening to me at the moment is prapannandham tamaprabhom. Step by step, I am gliding down to hell. This was the way she put it. Because if I continue this sense gratification, the way I have been going on, if you look into Srimad Bhagavatam, the lifestyle of Devahuti Devi with Kardama Prajapati, as is explained there, was one of the highest standards of material life, which you can't even dream today, even in today's world, where material civilization is so advanced as it considered to be. But even this material civilization will feel envy of the standards of material life, what Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi had together in their long household life. Yena sambhavyamanena prapannandham tamaprabhom. I am simply going down to hell. And this is the realization Devahuti Devi had, and that is what she expressed when she spoke to Kapila Vasudev. Kapila Vasudev looked at Devahuti Devi and he understood that there is detachment and renunciation has developed in her heart. This is exactly what he was looking for. There were so many opportunities before to talk about, to give instructions on spiritual life. But Kapila Vasudev never did that. Lord Kapila never did that because he knew at that point that this person is not ready to receive instructions. When someone is not ready and somebody is still hovering on a mental plane, trying to enjoy material life, at that situation, if you try to give him spiritual instructions, that spiritual instructions will not work. It is not possible because the mind is attached to the gratification of the senses and also attached to the various enjoyments, what is developing inside. So in this case, Kapila Vasudeva was waiting for the right time to come, and he realized that Devahuti Devi is now ready to receive instructions on the spiritual side, on the process of Krishna consciousness. So, what is the significance of this verse? That is also we have to think, because this is one verse which has been discussed to such a length that people have spoken about it for days together. Murvinna nidaram bhuman asadindriya darshanam yena sambhavyamanena prapannandham tamaprabham. What does it mean? What does it mean by this? It needs to be explained properly to understand what is Devahuti Devi is trying to say. Devahuti Devi is a very thoughtful person. She is very intelligent. That is why she was able to express this in this way to Kapila Vasudeva. Generally, we have in our every human being has normally been provided with different senses. We call it as the senses of knowledge and senses of action. That is, the Shastra is mentioned as 5 Jnanendriyam and 5 Karmendriyam. Jnanendriyams are the senses of knowledge and Karmendriyams are the senses of action. So, every one of us are doing one thing all the time. What is that? We are constantly satisfying these senses in some form or the other. Any sense you can take and look at it, you will see that all what we are doing is, we are trying to satisfy these senses. There's nothing else. This whole life in this material world, what all we are doing is just trying to satisfy these senses one after the other. If it is not eyes, it's the ears. If it's not ears, it's the nose. It's not the nose, it's the tongue. Or if not the tongue, it's the skin. So something or the other, this constant gratification of the senses is the only thing what we normal people do in this world. Unless one has transcended all the 3 phases of existence of Jagrat, Supna and Sushupti, one has crossed over that, they are engaged in the transcendental activities. But otherwise, ordinary people in this world engage only in the satisfying these 5 senses. You can take any of these senses and see for yourself that is there a time when we can say that I have now totally satisfied this particular sense. You can analyze this. You can think about it yourself when you have some free time and analyze this point very carefully. That eyes wants to see always something nicely. And is there a time they can say that I am satisfied by seeing? People are going on holidays. Why? Because they want to see new places. They want to see and satisfy their sense of vision. They want to enjoy more scenes. In addition to that, the science has given us this beautiful instrument called television. Why? Because we can satisfy our senses again to satisfy the eyes. So, like this, there is no limit where you can draw and say that I had enough of satisfaction of my eyes and I have seen enough. Okay, after living for 50 or 60 years in this world, we got so old that we can see that our own eyes are failing. And even at that time, we are not going to stop it. What we are thinking is looking for a new specs then. That's what the next thing we are going to do. We are not saying that, oh, I had enough of all these things. I have seen enough in this world. Let me stop it now. But no, I am not going to stop it. What do I do? The next thing is, I keep changing my glasses. That's the next move in the eyes. That is how much we are surrendered to this sense gratification, process sense gratification. Now, if you leave the eyes, you take the case of nose, for example. The industry of which runs this industry of smelling, or the perfume industry, you can see in the reports, in the newspapers and television and all that, it runs to billions and billions of pounds. Why? Because there is such a demand for this satisfying the smell of the nose or the power of the nose. So the nose is demanding so much that there is such a huge industry built up behind it to satisfy that desire of gratification of the nose. What to talk about the ears? Ears case is so difficult to explain that is there a time we can say that we are satisfied with the ears? Ears are demanding so much. And not only that, even when we come to spiritual life, still we want to engage as much as possible in music, because music is still so pleasing to the ears that we will not be able to give up music even at that time. We want to hear the music. Of course, it is different if you are here singing about Krishna and if you are glorifying Krishna, that music is beneficial. But there is so much other music industry in this world which has been based on material life in this world, and which is referred to in the Shastras as Gramya Gidam. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a beautiful story of a birds who were Mabhadyasam Tarunyam Gaja Ivavashayam Arjayam. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two instances. The deer, when it's caught in the forest, the deer is very much attracted to music, and music actually destroys him at the end, because when he hears music, he forgets about the surroundings and he stands there with his ears fully focused to listen to the music, and that is how he gets caught by the hunters. So that is the story of the ears. Now, out of these five senses of knowledge which we have, namely the ears, the eyes, the nose, the tongue and the skin, or the sense of touch, all these five senses are very powerful, and they are always demanding things from us. We are forced to please these five senses all the time. This is all what we are doing in this world. Lord Ramchandra was actually once traveling in the forest, and during his long journey from Ayodhya, first he traveled to Chitragodam and then to Panchavadi and then to Kishkindha. Like that, so many places he visited. His brother, Ramchandra's younger brother Lakshmana, asked Ramchandra for some spiritual instructions, because that was the only time when he could find his brother a bit free from the engagements in Ayodhya. Ramchandra told Lakshmana that there is only one instruction I can tell you, and that is this. And that is a very, very interesting instruction known in the instructions to Lakshmana. It is in the Ramayana. You can see this in explained in length. Ramchandra told Lakshmana that there is nothing new in this world. You can never say that there is something new in this world. Everything what's happening in this world is repetition of the same thing again and again and again. Whether it is material life or some other life, whatever it is, all that is happening is continuously repeating of what has been done before or in the past by others, and we are thinking for the moment, oh, this is something new which I can enjoy, and I try to develop that. Puna punas charuvida charvananam, that is how in the Bhagavatam it says, it's coming, the chewing the chewed again and again. But in spite of all that, are we at any time, can we say that I had enough of it? No, we will never say that, because we never had enough of it. And that is why, that is how these senses are. That is so difficult to control them. Now, out of all these five senses, all senses have only one activity. That therefore, there is one sense which is considered to be the leader among the five. Why? If this particular leader has one, although he is one person, he has two actions. That is the difficulty with him. That eyes and ears and nose and the touch of sense of touch, that is something which is only one sense and satisfies only one sense. But as far as the tongue is concerned, it has two different functions. In other words, it is known as different vritti. Vritti is the word that is used in the Shastra. That the tongue has one feature, one thing. It wants to speak all the time. Some nonsense it has to keep on talking. Something or the other. That is the nature of the tongue. In addition to that, this also wants to eat as much prasadam or food or whatever that is possible. So this eating or the sense of the tongue has these two dual functions. And because it has those two dual functions, he is considered to be the leader among all the five senses. And because he is the leader, he is the one who is most difficult to get in, is the most difficult to control. You may be able to find control of all the other senses somehow or the other. But this particular one, known as tongue, it is so hard to control that in the Bhagavatam there is a reference to the tongue alone, separately mentioned in the Ekadasha Skandam. It says there that Rasanam Yavil, that when the rasana or the sense of the tasting, unless it is controlled, you have not controlled any other senses. That is how it is mentioned that if you have not controlled the tongue, it has to be understood that you have not controlled any other sense in your body. That is the way the instruction is given there. That so that therefore this tongue is the most difficult thing to control of all the senses. Now, this tongue also, how did this tongue get into this situation? Tongue has got into this situation because from the beginning, the tongue has got used to so many things. It has got to eating so many nice foodstuff. In addition to that, it has got also the habit of speaking all the time. And it developed that habit, and from then on, it has become like that. So now, at this stage, if we want to control this tongue, it's getting very, very difficult. So, Dharahuni Devi's question to Kapila Vasudev was that Prapannandham Tama Prabhom, that if I go on doing this, what will happen to me? And she very openly said to Kapila, Lord Kapila, that if I do this, one day I will fall down into the bottommost part or bottommost pit of the Antaramisram. Antaramisram is that hellish planet from where once you have fallen in, it is so hard to come out of it. That is the nature of Antaramisram. In other words, there is no hope of escape from that once you have fallen into that kind of situation. So, if you look at this activities of the tongue, you can see in one's own life, I mean, there are so many examples to explain this controlling of the tongue. Just like, if you take, this is just an example, that if you take the general class of people who are addicted to drinking coffee or tea or even beer, whatever the people who are used to drinking so many different things, you will notice that how did they come to this habit in the first instance? Basically, take for example the example of a child who is 4 or 5 years old. In the beginning, he was not, when he was born, he had no desire to drink coffee or tea. But when he was about 4 or 5 years old, all his parents were drinking tea, or uncles or aunts or somebody at home, they were all drinking tea. So he was going and standing there with his mouth open, looking at them what they were doing. So his father tells his mother that give him also some coffee or tea. That is how he's getting introduced to that. So he tells his father tells his mother that give him some coffee or tea, whatever that is. Today you can see in this world how many people are addicted to this tea drinking and coffee drinking. So the mother brings some coffee and gives it to him. He's only 5 years old. He's not been introduced yet. He takes the coffee, and as soon as he taken the coffee, he doesn't like it because it's bitter. He doesn't like it. He returns it back, saying that I don't want to drink the coffee. But father is feeling attachment for him and thinking that, oh, we are all having a good time drinking this coffee. He should also have the same habit of drinking coffee. So he says to the mother, put some more sugar into it so he will be able to drink that. That is how he's introducing his son, beloved son, to coffee drinking. So the mother puts some more sugar into it, and with the sweetness he drinks it. So he starts drinking this coffee like this. And then after some time he carries on doing this for a while. One day, by some reason, mother says to the son that today we haven't got enough sugar here. So the son says, doesn't matter, I'll give it a try without the sugar. So that time he has he has started drinking the coffee even without sugar. He was simply able to drink the coffee, although it was not very tasty in the beginning. It has now become a tasty thing for him. He is able to enjoy the nectar of drinking that coffee. So from this you can see that why did this happen to him? Initially he had no desire to drink coffee. But now you can say he is a qualified coffee drinker. He is fully qualified now because even without sugar and milk he is enjoying that black coffee. I have seen this, I have tried to look at this habit also with many, many people in the offices, particularly when you work in the office, you will see that most of them come to office around 9. Before they get to office, they already had at least one cup at home before they, with the breakfast, a cup of tea or coffee is necessary. Then some of them may have 2 cups of coffee, depends on the habit, what they have cultivated. When they get into office, first thing is they go into the tea room or go to the machine to get their first cup of coffee. They need it to start the day. After they have got that, around 10, 10:30, they have another cup. By then they are a bit stressed by the work. So they have their second cup of coffee or tea. Then by the time, lunchtime, by 12, 12:30, they are restless again. They have to have their third cup in the office. So constantly, the part of the office is functioning as a coffee shop. And everyone is busy with this coffee or tea drinking. And by middle of the day, he already had 3 or 4 cups of coffee or tea. And then as soon as the lunchtime, they had a cup. And then come back, by about 3 o'clock, they had another one. And then before they leave the office, they want to be in good mood. So they have to have another cup of coffee. So if you look at this way, when they get back home, first thing they have another cup. And before they go to bed, probably they have another one. So like this, if you look at the habit people have developed over a number of years, you can see that they would normally consume about 8 or 9 cups of coffee or tea a day, which is quite normal among many, many people. Some people who consider that it is not the best, they may restrict it, but 5 or 6 cups. But normally it can go up to 8 or 9 cups of tea or coffee. If you take this, if you take this quantity of coffee a person has drunk in a day, sometimes it's nice to calculate all these things, you know. Take a calculator and see how many liters have gone in that particular day. You will see that he has probably drunk about 3 liters of this coffee or tea inside on that particular day. If you calculate 3 liters a day multiplied by 365 days in a year, because this is a non-stop thing, whether he's at home or in the office, he's still drinking this. He's not able to give it up because it's become so much a habit with that person. So 3 times he multiplied by 365. And this person has retired now and he's gone old. He is now 85 or say 90 years old. You ask him that, have you had enough? Do you want to have your cup of tea? And if he doesn't get his cup of tea or coffee in the morning, he is very, very upset that day. So if you multiply these 3 liters by 365, and if he has started drinking tea from the age of 5, and he is now 85 or 90, that means about 80 years approximately, he has drunk tea or coffee in this way. 3 liters a day, 365 days a year, 80 years. You can multiply that and see how much quantity of coffee or tea that is. You will notice there, I have calculated, that's why I'm saying this. 3 liters multiplied by say 400 roughly, it's about 1200 liters. 1200 liters multiplied by another 80 years, that means about 9000, 1200, 3 times 400 is 1200 liters. 1200 liters multiplied by 80, that's 12,000, 96,000 liters. That means about 96 cubic meters. That is a very, very large quantity. More or less you can say it is almost the size of a small swimming pool. That is how much quantity of coffee or tea the person has drunk in his life. And still, what is he saying? If you ask him, he's saying that I would like to have a cup of tea now. He is 85, 90 years old and he's still feeling the necessity to have that particular cup of coffee or tea at the right time when he wanted to have it. So, what from this we can see that if among all the senses, This is only one sense. The tongue is only one sense. And this one sense, this is only one sense gratification of that particular sense. Not many, only one of them. So if you consider all the senses and all kinds of sense gratification that one can get from that, you can imagine how vast this process of sense gratification is and how difficult it is to control this sense gratification. That is why Devahuti Devi has really reflected on this issue. And that is why she said to Kapila Vasudev, Nurvenna nidaram bhuman asadindriya darshanai yena sambhavyamanena prapannandham tamaprabhom. That what do I do now? I am caught up in this situation. This is only one sense gratification. We have just taken example. It is the same story. You take something else. If it is alcohol, if you are drinking beer, how did this happen? Because you found some friends to go to the pub and went and sat with them. Encouraged by them, you started drinking. And that drinking habit gets stronger and stronger day by day. And if you consider those who have been drinking all along their life and the quantity of alcohol they have consumed at the end of their long lifespan, you can see that the amount of quantity they have consumed is so high that even then the senses are still demanding more alcohol to be consumed. So it is not an unusual thing that only one has to just analyze it and see oneself that how much addicted we are to all our different senses. How much we are controlled by our own senses. It is nothing but this sense gratification, as Ramchandra said to Krishna, Ramchandra said to Lakshmana, that is what is going on in this material world. So when Kapila Vasudev heard this words from Devahuti Devi, immediately Kapila Vasudev looked at Devahuti Devi and he decided to instruct on the process of Bhakti Yoga. And that is where the beginning of Bhakti Yoga begins in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Sri Bhagavan Vaja, it says there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Bhagavan Vaja, Yoga Nishreyasa Pumsam, that yoga, what exactly referred to by Kapila Vasudev, Nishreyasa Pumsam, that it is meant for ultimately uplifting a person or freeing oneself from this sense gratification. Why? Dukhasyaja, Sukhasyajam. That Kapila Vasudev said to Devahuti Devi that we have to remember one important thing is this, that when the senses are enjoying the sense gratification or the sense objects, when the senses are enjoying the sense objects, who is actually enjoying? This is the first thing we have to ask. Is the senses that is enjoying? No, actually it is not the senses what is actually enjoying it. Who is actually enjoying it then? According to the Shastram, according to the Vedic literature, it is a very clear definition that who is actually enjoying is that behind all these senses, there is one element inside which is known as the mind. Who is actually enjoying? It is the mind who is actually enjoying sense gratification, not the senses. We falsely think that, oh, I am enjoying it. But actually, who is that person behind it? It is that mind inside. And we don't know where this mind is. Some people say the mind is here. Some people say it is here. But whatever it is, there is something inside in a person's body. And whenever he is enjoying any sense gratification, it is the mind that is inside who is actually saying that I am enjoying or I am suffering. It is the same thing with others also. Dukhasyaja, sukhasyaja. Both happiness and distress is actually enjoyed by this mind. It is not normally. Its location is unknown. According to the modern science, they refer to that it is something here. But in the Vedic literature, the reference is it is somewhere here. Manasakshi they call it, or the witness inside. So whatever it is something else that is who is enjoying this happiness or sense gratification. If it is like that, Kapila Vasudev said to Devahuti Devi, the whole nine chapters, the message, Kapila Vasudev kept that in one verse in the Bhagavatam. He kept it in one verse. And in that one verse, he said to Kapila Vasudev, said to Devahuti Devi, Chedakhalvasya bandhaya muktaye jalpanomadam guneshu saktam bandhaya radam va pumse muktaye. That this is the whole essence of the Kapila Vasudev teachings of Lord Kapila. It's all in this one verse. ಛೇದ ಖಲ್ವಸ್ಯ ಬಂಧಾಯ ಮುಕ್ತಯೇ ಚಲ್ಪನೋ ಮದಂ ಗುಣೇಶು ಸಕ್ತಂ ಬಂಧಾಯ ರಥಂ ವಾ ಪುಂಸಿ ಮುಕ್ತಯೇ. That how did this situation develop in one's life? How did you get one addicted to sense gratification? This is what Kapila Vasudeva is asking. Why? Cheda khalvasya bandhaya. This bandham or attachment to the mind, how did this develop? He is asking. Guneshu saktam bandhaya. Because he has associated with people who have got similar habits. That is the reason behind it. It is very simple to understand. That those who are addicted to sense gratification, those who are addicted to alcohol, you get attached to them, automatically you become subjected to, you become also an addiction, you also develop the same addiction for alcohol. It is not possible to free from that when you are totally in the association of such people. Similarly, those who are addicted to sex life or sense gratification, they will always talk about such topics, and their interest will also be to read and study such topics. And if you associate with such people, in due course, you can always see this in the when you start your work in the offices. Young people who were originally not inclined that way to such an extent, who had a limited and this desire for sense gratification, over a period of time, due to association, they also fall into the same kind of thoughts and also get affected by the sense gratification. So, cheda khalvasya bandhaya muktaye chalpanamadam guneshu saktam bandhaya radam va pumse muktaye. It's very simple, he said. Kapila Vasudeva said to Devahuti Devi that this is how all the great teachers will teach, in the sense that they will make everything as simple as possible. Because if you tell somebody that it is so difficult to do it, and people will say that, well, it is very difficult anyway, so what's the point in pursuing it? So that will be their attitude. So to avoid that, Kapila Vasudeva made it very, very simple. This habit has come to you of gratifying your senses because you have got attached to people who are gratifying their senses. On the other hand, he said to Devahuti Devi, on the other hand, if you attach your mind, muktaye chalpanamadam, that if you develop an attachment to those people who are trying to progress on the spiritual path, or in other words, who are devotees of Krishna, muktaye chalpanamadam, that who wants to free themselves from this attachment to sense gratification, free themselves from this attachment, and who have developed that Krishna consciousness in them, guneshu saktam bandhaya radam va pumsi muktaye, that as soon as you develop attachment to devotees, if the devotees are progressing in their spiritual life for freeing themselves from this cycle of material life or from this conditioned existence, eventually you will also, he said to her, you will also develop that freedom from this sense gratification. Radham va pumse muktaye. The word used is radham. Radham means it is an extreme state of attachment to Krishna. That kind of relationship with Krishna. When you associate with such people, radham va pumse muktaye, that automatically the doors of liberation will be open to you. And that is how Kapila Vasudeva spoke about it to Devahuti Devi. Devahuti Devi's understanding was that Devahuti wanted to find out more about it. He wanted to know how does that system work. It is then that Kapila Vasudeva started explaining that process in detail. That initially he opened up this understanding to her, that you have fallen into sense gratification because the sense gratification, her association has become like that, and sense gratification has controlled you. Exactly the same way, if that same mind is turned towards the devotees or towards those who are cultivating Krishna consciousness, immediately you get released from that bondage of sense gratification and you get attached to spiritual life, and also eventually the freedom from material existence. That is what it says. Cheda khalvasya bandhaya muktaye chalpanamadam guneshu saktam bandhaya radam va pumsi muktaye. That the very thing what has caused, actually the nature of the mind is always like that. If you look at mind carefully, you can notice it also. The mind has got one problem. It has to be always leaning on to something else. It's just like the ladder. It leans on to something. If it is leaning on to sense gratification, it will enjoy sense gratification. But if you take it out of the sense gratification, it has to be kept leaning on to something else. Otherwise, it cannot stay. Sometimes you can see so many places. You can look at people. They also have the same habit. Sometimes if you come out of the temple room and you come straight out, that wall where you queue up for the into the prasadam room, people will be standing there. So most of them will either lean onto the wall and they keep their hand on that small lintel-like thing and they rest there. And they'll be chatting there. So in the meanwhile, if you ask them that, oh, you're queuing up for prasadam, oh, no, I'm not. And they'll move on somewhere else and they'll put their hand somewhere else. So this is just the habit is. The habit is that you have to be leaning onto something. In the Bhagavatam class, if you look downstairs, which seats gets filled up first? That where you can slant onto the wall. That's where it gets filled up first. And then others come in and they sit in the front, wherever they can. So that is quite natural, that we all have this habit of leaning onto something else and making ourselves a bit comfortable. So in the same way, the mind is also like that. Mind wants to lean onto something. And if it is leaning on the sense gratification, then mind goes in that direction. But if the same mind is taken out of sense gratification and it is leaning on to Krishna consciousness, then it enjoys Krishna consciousness. But it is very simple to say that, oh, take the mind out of sense gratification, put it on to Krishna consciousness. It's all very easily said and done. But in the Bhagavatam, while talking about this, Kapila Vasudeva says to Devahuti Devi that it is possible. It is possible. How is it possible? That question came up automatically. And that is why then Kapila Vasudeva says to Devahuti that the process is very, very simple. That the Supreme Lord Krishna, when He came to this planet, when He came to this material world, one of His most important functions was to get this mind under control. That is why the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is given this specific title as Nirodham. Nirodham means how to get the mind under control. You will see in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanam udaya manyandaram ishanukatha nirodho muktir ashrayaha. Nirodham is the word for the 10th canto. Mukti or liberation is the word for the 11th canto. Ashrayam or shelter is the word for the 12th canto. So the 10, 11 and 12, where Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is present in all these three cantos in full, they have been given these specific titles. Nirodha means getting the mind under control. And how can you get the mind under control? Read the 90 chapters of the 10th canto. That is what Srimad Bhagavatam says. Apparently, when Uddhava, Krishna's dearmost devotee, once was approached by a person, and he asked Uddhava, "My dear Uddhava, you had such a long association with Krishna. How many years? Out of 125 years, Uddhava spent 112 years with Krishna. Can anyone had that good fortune what Uddhava had? Not even the gopis of Vrindavanam had such a long association. Vasudeva and Devaki didn't have. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Devi didn't have. Nobody had that association what Uddhava had. 112 years, a constant association. Not even Arjuna has had that. Arjuna had to go to Indraprastha and Hastinapur many times. But otherwise, a lot of time Arjuna had also spent with Krishna. But no one else has spent as much time as Uddhava had spent with Krishna. So somebody asked Uddhava that, "My dear Uddhava, you have spent such a long time with Krishna, 112 years of life. So there is no one who is more fortunate than me," he said. He said to Uddhava, Uddhava said, "No, I am not most fortunate person." "Why?" "You know, I missed that first 12 years," he said. This was Uddhava's answer to that person. "Why?" He said, "I have associated with Krishna because the first time Krishna is meeting Uddhava in Mathura, when he was 12 years old, they were both same age and they looked alike as well. And in the Bhagavatam there is reference to Uddhava, Vrishninam pravaryo mandri Krishnasya daidasaka Shishyo Brihaspade Sakshal Uddhavo Buddhisattamaha. That Uddhava is a very, very intelligent person. And Krishna recognized this. After all, the Supreme Lord can identify who is intelligent and who is dull. He found out Uddhava was a very intelligent person. So, first day itself, when Kamsa was killed, first thing Krishna did was install him as his prime minister. So, Ugrasena was the king and Uddhava was the prime minister. And Krishna was behind the scene, all these things. So, Krishna installed Uddhava as the prime minister. And Uddhava since then has always been constantly accompanying Krishna in some way or the other. Always discussions with Krishna about the administration and about the future plans of the kingdom in Dwaraka. And so many things in the Bible you will see all the way through. And that is specifically the reason why eventually Krishna gave the ultimate knowledge also to Uddhava. So this Uddhava, when this devotee asked Uddhava that why he is feeling so much about it, he said the first 12 years I missed. Why is that first 12 years he missed so much was that it is in that 12 years Krishna performed his childhood pastimes. And these childhood pastimes, what Krishna has performed in Vrindavanam, has been done only with one intention. You will see near the end of 10th canto that Balacharidam, that childhood, what Krishna has performed there, is capable, and that was the intention of Krishna, that the mind gets attracted to that somehow or the other. And therefore, it is says there in the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to this, that these childhood pastimes of Krishna, till he left Vrindavanam and went to Mathura, the first 12 years when he spent his time with the gopis, and the gopis who glorified Krishna, and the gopis who remembered these pastimes of Krishna, that kept them going even after Krishna left Vrindavan and went to Mathura. That is why it says there, many years later, when the solar eclipse happened in Samanda Panchakam, and when all the devotees came there to see Krishna, all Vasudeva and Devaki and all the Yadavas, they came from Dwaraka to Samanda Panchakam. This is the place in Punjab today. And similarly, all the devotees came from Vrindavanam. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda came. All the gopis also came there. They have all come and they were all meeting together. From all over the country, people came to Samanda Panchakam. Why? Because they knew it was a solar eclipse and Krishna was going to be present there. So they also wanted to be there. It was at that instance that Krishna asked the gopis that how did you spend your time in Vrindavanam? And in return, reply to that, they answered Krishna, Ahoschavi nalina nabhavadara vindam yogisharei apivijindyam akadabodehi. Then all the great yogis are meditating on you all the time because they are meditating on Krishna's lotus feet just to have a glimpse of it, even for a second. That is their desire. A whole lifetime performing so much austerities and penances, completely focused on Krishna's beautiful form, they are meditating on form. Why? At least they are hoping at the time of leaving their body, they will just have a glimpse of that lotus feet of Krishna. This is why they are doing that. Then, there are other people who are performing so much penances, they are performing so much sacrifices and penances, hoping to please Krishna. Someone is studying the Vedic literature and living a life as per Krishna's instruction to please Krishna. Like this, so many different people are doing different things. Ahuschare nalina nabhavadaravindam yogisharei apivijindyam akadabodehi. That depth of understanding that the gopis said, samsara kubam patidotaranavalambam. When at some time in our life, we are ordinary people, all we know, we haven't learned any of the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam or any other Vedic literature, we never touched them. All we know that, we remember that Krishna who played in Vrindavanam with us, and who spend their glorious pastimes with us. And gopis who are so intelligent and clever, they made songs out of these pastimes of Krishna. And not only they made the songs, and these songs were sung regularly by them in their house. All the time, whether they were cleaning, whether they were cooking, whether they were looking after the children, whether they were looking after the old people, so many responsibilities the women had at home. And even while executing all their household responsibilities, they were able to focus on Krishna because that 12 years he spent there, that has given them that impetus to remember the Supreme Lord and throughout their life. And that is what kept them going. And they acknowledged this to Krishna. So, the point is that the mind is such a thing, if it gets attached to Krishna somehow or the other, for which Krishna performed his childhood pastimes, Srimad Bhagavatam, out of the 90 chapters, almost up to 45 chapters, refers to these childhood pastimes in some form or the other. And that is why that the mind has this nature. Somehow or the other, if it gets attracted to that, it will stick to it. It won't go away anywhere. Even if you want to take it away from there, it is not possible, because that is the, to separate the mind from something which it is leaning on to is very, very difficult. So, and then says, Kagla Vasudev says to Devahuti Devi, Sadam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavan nihil karma rasayanaha kathaha tajoshanodashu apavargavarpani shraddha retir bhaktir anukrameshani. This is how Srimad Bhagavatam says about that. That Devahuti Devi was asking this question, that how do I develop this attachment? In answer to that, this was the reply which Kadla Vasudev said to her, Sadam prasangan mama virya samvidam. There are people who will talk about, just like your mind got attached to those people who are engaged in sense gratification, you got involved. Similarly, if you get attracted to the people who are talking about Krishna, automatically your mind will get attracted by that, and there will be no question of again training the mind in a different way. Sadam prasangan mama virya samvido. What kind of stories? Stories about mama virya samvido bhavandi. That is the stories related to Krishna's glorious pastimes of in Vrindavanam. Bhavandi hril karna rasayanaha kathaha. That what is the speciality of these stories? They are not like the stories which once you hear, then you don't want to hear anymore. Sometimes you read some book, afterwards you think, oh, I shouldn't have read that book. You get that feeling like that sometimes. It happens. But these are not like that. In the Srimad Bhagavatam particularly, all the stories of Krishna are such, as soon as once you complete Srimad Bhagavatam, the next thing you will ask is, well, when can we start again the next time? That is the difference between Krishna's stories and other stories. Why? Bhavandi hril karna rasayanaha kathaha. That it is considered to be rasayanam. Rasayanam means, actually it is a preparation in the Ayurvedam also. In Ayurvedam, there are so many different preparations, rasayanams particularly those people who have gone very old and who have lost all the strength in the body. So just to give them some rejuvenation, these rasayanams are used. There are so many rasayanams, Agasthi rasayanam, Chavanaprasha rasayanam, Narasimha rasayanam, and different sages under their names, different rasayanams are produced. Rasayanam means basically that from different extracts of the herbs, from the different roots, they have extracted the essence and they have mixed together to give that required necessary potency for that person, what he is lacking in his body. So you have so many rasayanams like that in Ayurveda. But what happens to a person if he feels he's not feeling old in his body, but he's feeling old in his mind? Then what do you do? But that's a bigger problem, because if you have a problem with the body gets old, you can take this rasayanam and you can get the strength from that. But if the mind gets old, then what do you do? For example, sometimes we can see that, especially in the younger generation, you will find this, that they will always find it very, very hard. That say up to the age of 24, 25, they went to school, college, degree, this, that, everything, so many things they have done. And in the end of it, if you ask them, what are you going to do now? They haven't got any clear idea what they want to do, because up to now, they had a place to go, either to school or to college. And they went to the college and attended the program. Then you ask him, that, have you not done very well in your examinations? He says, yes, I have done very well. Will you not get a good marks? Yes, yes, I'll get a good marks. But then what's the problem? He says, up to now I had a place to go to. But now I don't know, I got this degree, but what am I going to do now? This question comes in. He wants a job. In other words, he wants to do some work somewhere in this world. Then he's looking for something to engage himself, but he's not able to find anything that suits him or he likes it to do it. But somehow or the other, he has developed and he started feeling in his own life a total sense of helplessness. Many times this happens to people. Then they feel a sense of helplessness, that what am I supposed to do in my life? This is what is the symptom of old age. If you look at the old people also, the same thing happens to them. It's not much different. When you get, say, up to the age of, say, 70 or 75, when you have become totally useless as far as the family is concerned, and the society is concerned, you are just like another old man. It's just a headache. Nobody wants to look at you. Nobody wants to talk to you anymore. At that time you are thinking that I have nothing much to contribute to this world anymore. And the world is thinking about me that I am useless. So what am I supposed to do? So this thought comes to him and he starts thinking, now what do I do? This will be the question he is asking all the time. Every day, at least 5 or 6 times, he will ask this question to himself, what do I do now? Children are not there, they have left home, got married, or they are setting up their own homes and gone away. Body is not listening, body has lost all its strength, and you are struggling hard to move from place to place. And the people around you, they are also not welcoming you very much. They are just allowing you to stay, but at the same time, whether you want to be there or not, a stage will come like this in life. It's not something, when one is very young, it's very difficult to comprehend these things because you are thinking that life will be like this forever. But life is not like that. Life will change one day. Day by day, the body is getting old, and a stage will come in life that you will never be able to, you will not be able to get things. In addition to all that, the tongue has lost its taste either, so you can't eat anything also. So overall, it is a situation that you are not able to, your life is not any more pleasant, that you are thinking that, what do I do now? So this, what do I do now, what do I do now, keeps coming all the time. So this is the symptom of old age. Old age is, this is the nature of the old age. In the sayings, in the Acharya says about this, Vruddhastaval Chinda Asaktaha. Then old age means simply thinking all the time, what do I do now, what do I do now? If you find the same questions coming to a young person who is 20 or 25, is there any difference between the old person and the young person then? It's not the same situation. That old age is something, now in some places you can say, what is the symptom of old age? Symptom of old age is that normally you can say that the hair all goes white, and your hands and legs are not very flexible anymore. You are struggling hard to move around. So these are symptoms of old age. But that is external symptoms. But more than that, the internal symptom is, what do I do now? This question keeps coming again and again in the mind, and you become helpless in this world. That is a symptom of old age. And if that old age, symptom of old age, comes to a young person at the age of 20 or 25, then there is no solution. The solution is in the shastras it says there that sadam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavandi hril karma rasayanaha kathaham. The answer is there, that such a person, in the Krishna says there, such a person should study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. The instructions in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Ekadasha Skandam, 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Krishna has given the instructions to a person, and also Bhagavad Gita. These are the two things that will make that person younger from here and get out of his old age. That is the answer to that question. Sadam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavandi hril karma rasayanaha kathaha. That Krishna is saying there that let him read Bhagavad Gita and let him study Ekadasha Skandam. And if he study and reads that, he will get that this is what I have to do in my life. This conviction will automatically come to him. He will understand, and that is the beauty of Krishna's message. All that Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita as well as in the Srimad Bhagavatam is purely based on logic and fully logical and reasoning. And Krishna says there, Sadam prasangan mama virya samvido bhavandi hril karma rasayanaha kathaha. That katha, if you continuously hear about Krishna, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna has spoken in the Ekadasha Skandam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, automatically, this is what I have to do in my life, this conviction will come to him. And then, that old age will walk out from him. Tadjoshanadashi abavarga varpani shraddha retir bhaktir anukramisharim. What happens is, when you hear about Krishna in that way, from the devotees, who is talking about Krishna, who is always glorifying Krishna, automatically that understanding will come to him that this is what I have to do in my life and this is what life is meant for. So Krishna's instructions are on this basis, that one has the opportunity to understand spiritual life, one has the opportunity to advance on the spiritual path. And that is what Krishna has spoken in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam while instructing the Kapila Vasudeva. So Kapila Vasudeva was saying this to Devahuti Devi about this process, and it also mentions there who is the devotee. That question comes automatically. Who is a devotee? That question is... Who is a devotee? The answer to that is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita when Kamala Vasudeva was talking about it. It's very, very clear. He mentions that Titikshava Karunigam Suhurda Sarvadehinam Ajada Shatrava Shanda Sadhava Sadhavushana. That a devotee's qualities, it says that Titikshava Karunigam. That the devotee is always thinking that there are certain qualities in a devotee what automatically develops. And it is that qualities that makes that person qualified to speak about Krishna. That Sukhrada Sarvadehi Nama Jada Shatravashanda Sadhava Sadhubhushana. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, while referring to this, Kapila Vasudeva says, a devotee who has these qualities, that who has come to this realization, that serving Krishna, not with the desire for a material enjoyment, or not with the desire for fame, but purely serving Krishna with the desire that others may hear about Krishna and take to the process of Krishna consciousness. It is such a devotee who can offer Krishna to others. That Tirichava Karuniya Suprada Sarvadehinam Ajada Shatrava Shanda Sadhava Sadhubhushana. That Sadhubhushanam, or one who is the gem of a devotee, or who is pure in his Krishna consciousness, he can offer Krishna to others. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Kapila Vasudeva instructed Devahuti Devi the science of Bhakti Yoga process, he said to her that from this you can see that the moment you associate with the devotees who are engaged in the preaching of the glories of Krishna, automatically you also become addicted to it. You will get attached to it. You will become addicted to it. And then that is the process of the Bhakti Yoga. It is very, very simple. Process of Bhakti Yoga is not very difficult compared to all other yoga systems. Compared to Jnana Yoga or Karma Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga system, this process of Bhakti Yoga is so simple that simply by moving our mind from sense gratification to, because mind is the cause of everything, it is this mind that is pushing us to act us in one way or the other. And if we separate this mind from senses and attach it to Krishna's pastimes, automatically the mind is released from its difficult state or difficult conditions. So Devahuti Devi was amazed by Kapila Vasudeva's this analysis of the mind, and she wanted to hear more about it. Kapila Vasudeva said to her that this mind, and if a devotee who is attached to Krishna in that way, what is going to happen to him? That was the question she has raised. Because it's very, very nice to hear that when one is hearing about Krishna all the time, especially the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly reference to Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavanam, that those pastimes has got that mesmerizing effect of pulling oneself to Krishna's, one cannot forget Krishna if one has studied those pastimes in the earlier chapters of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. So when this has happened, what happens to that person? It is then that Kapila Vasudeva said to Devahuti Devi, to such a person, Kapila Vasudeva says that I am such a person. Yesha maham priyalma sudascha sakha guru suhrdo devamishtam. That for such a person, I am attached in this way. Yesha maham priyalma, I am most dear to him. I am the dearmost person to that such a person who is chasing me in that way. I am most dear to him. Priya alma, then why is alma? Why? Because normally in this material world, generally in the society, we say that we love somebody. We have this statement often. We hear this because you get sometimes fed up listening about this loving business in this world. That people talk about loving each other, loving relationship between husband and wife, between between the individuals and all that. But in reality, all this love is based on our own individual individual desires. In other words, that actually we love ourselves too much. And just to support that, we have developed all this loving relationship with the people outside. Any relationship in this material world is contaminated with this sense of with the sense of you can say that it is based on one's own interest or selfishness. That is what is causing this love in this material world. There is no other love in this world. So whom do we love the most? We love ourselves the most. That is the simple fact. And it is only to satisfy our own loving relationship with ourselves that we have extended this loving relationship to others. Because by loving the other living entities, it satisfies our desires of loving our own self, that we finds this extension in them. So if that is the case, Kapila Vasudeva says here, Yesha Maham Priyalpa, that Kapila Vasudeva says here, if he is loving me, or in other words, loving Krishna, that love is not based on that platform. Why? To him, Priyalpa Sutascha, I will appear for him as his son. That is what that different mellows or different relationships he is talking about. Yesha Maham Priyalpa Sutascha. So this means I can appear, I can come to him as his son. Yesha Maham Priyalpa Sutascha Sakha Guru Sukhrudo Devamishtam. That I could be his best friend, I could be his teacher, the spiritual master. Sakha Guru Sukhrudo Devamishtam. Or if he wants to worship me, that can also be the best position for him. In either way, Krishna says that if he is after me, that I will offer all these different relationships to that person from my side. Actually, we all have this understanding that when we are worshipping Krishna and we are thinking, is it a one-sided relationship with Krishna? That's our normal understanding. That we are thinking that we are coming, chanting the rounds, chanting the holy name. We are serving Krishna all the time in different ways or the other. And we are also following all the principles. What we have been told is necessary in Krishna consciousness. So even after doing all these things, you are still thinking, is this a one-side relationship going on between me and Krishna? Is there nothing coming from the other side? If that is the case, there is no fun in that, is there? That is a relationship which is one-sided. It's going on one direction only. You are loving somebody and that person doesn't care for you. He just ignores you all the time. So that relationship won't last very long. It cannot last. That's a simple fact. Sometimes you experience that in this material world also. That relationships are always two-way. It works on both ways. Otherwise it doesn't work. So similarly, if our relationship with Krishna is also one-sided, then that relationship is not going to last very long. It will one day, we will also say goodbye to Krishna and we go our way. But Krishna is saying here that for a devotee who has come to me, it is never a one-sided relationship. It is more than once, it is always two-sided. That is why he says that, Esha Maham Priyalpa Sudascha Sakha Guru Sukhrudo Devamishtam. That in all these relationships, I am going to continue that relationship with him. Where is the proof for all these things? Somebody may ask this question. Automatically, we need proof for everything, isn't it? So proof is there. Proof is there. That is where the life of these great devotees comes in. We haven't reached that level of realization, nor we have that love for Krishna. And therefore, Krishna's love towards us is also a little bit restricted. It hasn't come to that. But over years of time, any devotee will say that some realization has come to him, that something is coming back from Krishna also. It's not been always a one-sided, one-track approach. It has never been like that. But in the case of great, great devotees, great personalities, who have lived a life of Krishna consciousness in total, and who had surrendered their mind, body, senses, everything to Krishna completely, and who had the good fortune of receiving that relationship from Krishna, they have recorded their experiences in different literature of devotion. And that is from there we get this information, that different personalities, some of them were very, very well known, some of them were not so well known. That is always there in the history. Some people who are very well known, they have been recorded, their history has been recorded in the books, and you can read about that. But there are so many unknown personalities also who are worshipping Krishna in that way. But they did not worship or they did not surrender to Krishna for the sake of fame or anything. Because they came to the solid conclusion in their life, or due to circumstances in life, or due to Krishna's plans, it so happened in their life that they were forced to take to shelter of Krishna in some way or the other. And when that happens in life, when one is fortunate enough to come to that stage of attachment, and when one has been able to, in the bhakti process, it is simple as that. This whole bhakti process is based on the intensity. In the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you will notice there that that what is bhakti? Bhakti means somehow or the other getting the mind involved in Krishna. And getting mind attached to Krishna is the ultimate goal. Ena gena pivayena mana Krishna niveshayal. And what is the process? How is the process work? Somebody loves Krishna, somebody hates Krishna. But if that hating process also, when the intensity gets very, very strong, one day Krishna has to come and kill him. And because he gets killed by Krishna, he goes back to the spiritual world. So it happened in the same case, in the way with Kamsa, happened the same thing with the Shishuval. It happened with so many other people. And Pandavas loved Krishna, so they went back. Sri Narayana Maharshi served Krishna. And like this, all the great devotees of Krishna, they had a relationship with Krishna. The only difference between us and those devotees is that in our case, that relationship has not matured, or it has not got that intensity of the, or the strength of that relationship has not grown strongly. And because of the devotee's case of trying to serve Krishna, that this relationship, till that matures, we are always in a difficult situation. We are always thinking that, what am I doing? Is the right thing or not? Am I doing something? Is it something going to happen? Is Krishna there? Although you go and stand in front of Krishna, see his beautiful form, and you are listening about Krishna, chanting the holy name, taking prasad and following the principle. So many things you do, but still automatically sometimes the mind won't allow you to focus on it strongly. Mind takes, nobody knows in which direction the mind goes. Nobody can say anything about it. And therefore Krishna has also said, Durjayana maham mana. Of all the things in this world, the most difficult thing to control is the mind. So that mind is there inside, and this mind is causing all the problems. The gross body one day will die and go. That is not a problem. But this mind, which is the main subtle element in the subtle body, it is this mind that is causing us our numerous material bodies again in the future. And the very same mind, if it can be engaged in Krishna, thoughts of Krishna, the same mind will cause the cause of liberation also. Comes from the mind. That is why it said there. That is why this statement from Kapila Vasudeva to Devahuti is so profound that it says there, Cheda kalvasya bandhaya muktaye chalpano madam guneshu saktam bandhaya iradam va pumse muktaye. That the same mind, if it is attached to Krishna, the same thing will develop liberation, or ultimately one will be freed from his conditioned life. So this was the essence of that message from Kapila Vasudev to Devahuti Devi. So if the mind is such that mind has to rest on something we have seen before, then how do we make that mind that to happen, to get attracted to it? There is a statement about that Chitta Dratva Mridai Vijindya Bahubi Siddhyandi Janmandarehi. That after many, many births only, such a thing can happen easily. That in several births time, sometimes we engage in so many activities. That we engage in so many activities, but material life will always drag you down in different directions. It will happen. Chitta Dratva Mridai Vijindya Bahubi Siddhyandi Janmandarehi. many, many lifetimes. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita also, Bahunam janmana mande jnanavan maham pravadyade vasudeva sarvamidi samahalma sudurlabha. That this come to that point of understanding that everything in life is ultimately Krishna. There is nothing else that exists outside Krishna consciousness. To come to that point of understanding, it takes time, it takes lifetime sometimes. Sometimes some great teachers of who are preaching different religious principles, or even sometimes in school or in college, you can see that if you want to teach a difficult subject to somebody, if you in the beginning itself you tell them it is a very difficult subject and you try to teach that subject, normally the student will be a little bit hesitant to take to it seriously because he thinks that it is going to be very difficult to learn this and it's going to take a very, very long time. So normally what the teachers do is that in the beginning itself they will say it's not so difficult. They'll make it as simple as possible and they'll make the statement that if you spend an hour or two a day over a period of time, you will be able to get a good control of it and good to get to know the subject very well. So that is how they do. And Krishna has done the same thing. Prabhupada also done the same thing. There was not much different. The way Prabhupada preached also is very much a reflection of this. Prabhupada said to the devotees, you chant, follow all the regulatory principles, chant 16 rounds a day, you will eventually go back to the spiritual world. That's Prabhupada has spoken to the devotees. Now on what strength has it been said? Because then the point is this, that if you tell everybody, look, you're not going to make it in another 10 lifetimes, it's going to be another 20 lifetimes or 30 lifetimes, you have to come. Man will start thinking, oh, it's not quite worthwhile, let me enjoy this life, rather than waiting for 30 lifetimes to come. That's not going to happen. Rather, if you put it to the person, that if you chant Hare Krishna, and seriously if you chant, if you serve Krishna, if you follow these principles, eventually that very process itself will stimulate that person and that he will never be able to leave Krishna and go away from him. That is the normal process in way in which Krishna consciousness works. So Krishna has also done the same thing. Krishna said that this is the knowledge, this is the spiritual knowledge. But Krishna has often mentioned that Bahunam Janmanamandi Yanavan Maham Prabhadyade, that knowledge of Krishna consciousness, as it increases inside and realization starts coming in. Knowledge has got two aspects. What are they? One knowledge is called Parokshan. Parokshan means that knowledge, everything what we learn from the books. You learn a lot of verses, you will read a lot of books and you have understood everything theoretically. That knowledge from the spiritual point of view is not considered to be knowledge because the knowledge is not manifested in the person's life yet. And therefore, because it is not manifested, that knowledge is considered to be Parokshan. Parokshan means something which is not manifested. Now, when this knowledge has actually started changing the person's life and he becomes a complete change happens in his life in all sorts of areas, in other words, his devotional kripa has grown so strongly, then that knowledge is known as Aparoksham. Aparoksham means it has started manifesting in him. There is a book known as Aparoksha Anubhuti, that the blissful existence of the spirit soul in the realized state. So there is so many literature on the realized souls they have contributed to us. Now, Villumangalam wrote Karnavadam. Sri Krishna Karnavadam, Villumangalam presented to this world. One of the most classical literature on the devotional science. So you can see that the principle of Krishna consciousness, the way Villumangalam presented and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented, they are all based on this one principle. Get the mind out of sense gratification, bring it and engage that in Krishna's service. Somehow or the other, get the mind attached to Krishna. Either by reading Srimad Bhagavatam or by engaging in Krishna service, chanting the holy name, hearing the kirtan, taking prasadam, no matter, all the different processes. Somehow or the other, the mind should get involved in serving Krishna or the thoughts of Krishna. So, Villumangalam wrote Krishna Karnavadam. More or less the same time when Villumangalam was living, there was a lady who lived almost the same period in Villumangalam's time. And this lady, she was born in a family of great personalities, in the sense that all the members of her family were scholars. They were very, very versed, well versed in the Vedic literature. They were also from a family who were very well-to-do. They were not poor people. In those days, this has happened probably 400 or 500 years ago. When Vilamangalam's time, and you will notice there that at that time, when in one occasion, it so happened, a young girl in that family, she was only about 17 or 18 years old, she got married, and due to some misfortune, her husband died. And when the husband died, they were, in those days, the families were not like today. Today's families, husband, wife, and two kids and a dog, that's the family today. There's nothing else exists in the family. But in the olden days, the families were much larger. In other words, the large families lived together. And in that life, they felt protection. They didn't have a concern about their survival so much like today. So it was a situation like that. And this particular family, there were so many members in that family, so many brothers and sisters and grandparents and everybody. They lived together in their house. But this particular girl, she had got married, and her marriage didn't last very, very, very long time. In a year or so, her husband died. Due to some misfortune, it happened. The society was so strict and rigid and very orthodox in their views at that time that she had no opportunity to marry a second time. It was not acceptable at that time. Because marriage, from the point of view, we get very concerned about it. When we talk about it, people are marrying nowadays, at least half a dozen times there are people who are married and still they are looking for love and happiness in this world, even after the sixth marriage. So that is modern world, because our concept of marriage is so different than what was the concept in the Vedic times. In the Vedic times, marriage was considered as a necessity. It was considered as a sacrifice, which was done only those brahmacharis who cannot continue their spiritual pursuit or moving on to the sannyasa ashram and moving on further in their spiritual life. So man's life was meant for that. If one could not do that, and one had difficulty in controlling his own sex desires, he was allowed to marry. And that was the system. And that is how people married. But in this particular, and because of that, remarriage was not considered a normal thing. And most of the times, okay, if that is what the fate or destiny has brought to me, they were willing to accept that. And that is how they lived their life. So in that society, which was very, very rigid, and which was an orthodox society who followed the principles of Vedic culture very rigidly, this lady had in a difficult situation. It so happened that once Vilamangalam came to visit that family. Vilamangalam was in their family as a sannyasi. He was invited by the family members to receive bhiksha. In other words, sannyasis were invited and therefore offered food. And the sannyasis used to spend time instructing them about the seriousness of spiritual life. These things were very, very common those days in that society. So Vilamangalam was invited to this home once, and at that time Vilamangalam personally spoke to most of the members of the family. And this particular girl who had lost her husband, normally it was not a practice to speak to the sannyasis and elderly members standing opposite to them directly. That was not considered proper in their system. They stood behind a door and spoke in a very controlled tone to the sannyasis. And the sannyasis also accepted in that way. So when Vilamangalam saw this girl, knowing very well her situation in that condition, Vilamangalam wanted to give her some benefit from his visit at that time. So when he spoke to her, her name was Amba, she so told Vilamangalam that, is there any harm in worshipping Krishna as a little boy? That was the first question she put to him. So Kururamba, that was her family name, she asked Vilamangalam this question. Vilamangalam understood from that this girl had a desire to have children. But there was no possibility of having any children now, because the marriage is over, now the husband is dead. And she has to live like this for the rest of her life. Although she will be looked after at her home by the other members of the family, her life is going to be completely in a very unfortunate situation, in the sense that she didn't have anything to look forward to for herself, because she had no children and neither husband. So in that situation, normally they live a life which is totally aloof from everyone else. Generally, they spend their time in the kitchen, assisting them in cooking or looking after the other children who are at home. So they live a life, but very much in a distressed condition. So knowing very well that she had the desire to have children, Vilamangalam blessed her that she should worship Krishna in that form. In that form, she wants to worship him. And because she wanted to have a son, she wanted to have a little boy as her son, this lady, Uramba, started worshipping Krishna in that form at the age of 17. She took it very seriously because these instructions have come to her from a very great personality like Vilamangalam, who wrote Krishna Karnamakam. Vilamangalam gave these instructions to her and left home. That day onwards, from that day, she was 17, till she was 70, she continued this worship of Krishna in that little boy's form, that she worshipped him. She worshipped him, not only that, she continuously chanted the holy name all the time in this whole 50-60 years time. That is what she did. She had nothing else to do. Whatever she was doing in the home, as a work she did, as a routine way, she carried out her duty. But at the same time, she didn't have any time for anything else except serving Krishna. So at the end of her life, she was probably 70 or 75 years old. She had to give up her body. The time has come to leave this world. And by now, her mind has gone to such a level of attachment to Krishna that she started thinking herself that all my life I have spent calling Krishna's name and offering my prasad of food to Krishna, and still I have not seen this boy whom I was worshipping. This was the thoughts which were going through Kuramba's mind. So when this was happening, and one day while she was cooking, some offering she was cooking for the deity in the kitchen, Krishna walked in, opening the door, and got into the room. And the lady was least perturbed seeing Krishna, because by now, by this age of 70 or even older than that, she has become so Krishna conscious in her life that for her, no world existed outside except Krishna in the heart. Krishna and her, these were the two personalities existed in this world. Everything else was completely superficial for her. It was just another pastime of the Maya, what she was witnessing in this world. So there is a state of consciousness one can reach in this one's own life by nurturing Krishna consciousness to such a level that Krishna walked into her kitchen one day. And when Krishna came, that scene is described by her. When Krishna walked in, Krishna had in his waist, he has tied these bells all around. And he was holding on to that only for one reason. Krishna was complaining to her that I am feeling hungry. Apparently when Krishna feels hungry, this starts falling off from there, from his waist. And he said this to Kuranamba. Kuranamba prepared a nice feast and offered to Krishna. And from that day, from the age of 70 or so, right up to the point when she gave up her body, Krishna was a close associate of this devotee all along her life. She took prasadam with her, and did everything what a child will do for a mother. Exactly like that, Krishna has acted with her. The only difference was, Kuranamba has 70 years when she met Krishna first time. When she left the world, she was over 90 years old. That means about 20 years time. And in this 20 years time, Krishna has not grown up. Krishna was 2 years when he came in. And when Krishna left her at the age of 90, when she gave up her body, he was still 2 years old. That was the difference. So, Sadambra Sangan Maviya Sambidam Bhavandihril Karma Rasayana Katha Tajoshanashu Abhavarga Vartmani Shraddha Radir Bhaktir Anukramishadi. That from Shraddha, from seriousness, when one gets serious about spiritual life, Shraddha comes in, or when one becomes very serious about it, Shraddha Radir Bhakti. One gets attached to Krishna so much, and it is then that after that devotion comes in. So you can see, when we call somebody as a devotee, our reference to that devotee is only in respect to that particular physical manifestations, not based on the consciousness. But Srimad Bhagavatam is saying there, Shraddha Radhir Bhakti Anukramishyadi. First things comes Shraddha, and then comes Radhi, attachment to Krishna, and then comes devotion or bhakti to him. Shraddhara Dharu Bhakti Anukramishari. Kapila Vasudeva says there, this is the sequence in which that thing happens. So ultimately, that 20 years of time, Krishna and Kuriranga played together. And then eventually, one day, by now, the whole family scene has changed. Most of the people have left home, gone away. And this pastime between Krishna and Kuriranga continued 20 years. And eventually, one day, Kuriranga had to leave this world. She had to die. So when she was dying, the day she had to die, in the morning after bathing and performing her regular activities at home, the spiritual activities, what normally the women did at that time, she has performed all that, and morning she told Krishna that today it looks to me that this is my last day. And when she said that to Krishna, Krishna apparently got a little bit nervous, because Krishna had no experience how to handle a person when he is leaving this world. And here is his 2 years old boy, what can he do? So he was thinking like this, that if Kuriranga is leaving at this time, what am I supposed to do? Krishna was thinking like that. And Krishna was also thinking that, let me look at other devotees, what did they do when they were leaving this world? That's why Krishna's thoughts went. Krishna held on to her, to the mother's hand all the time. And at the time of the soul leaving that body, Krishna asked Kuriranga, what are you seeing now? He said, I'm seeing somebody who is who is afraid by death personified. Yet bhivayedi swayam bhayam. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto itself, Vedavyasa Maharshi says there, yel bhivayedi swayam bhayam. Bhayam, the fear personified, is frightened of somebody. I'm seeing that person now. In other words, Krishna was outside, Krishna was within. So there was no question of any more fear. And she, with a smiling face, she left this world. And Krishna had to leave in that condition. And that is what the experience of these great devotees are. So from this you can see that this relationship, yesha amaham priyalpa sudhascha sakha guru suhurdo devamishtam, that in all these different relationships, Krishna is willing to develop that reciprocal relationship with the devotee. That is Krishna's guarantee in this third canto, in the teachings of Lord Kapila. That is the speciality of the process of bhakti. Bhakti process is not very complicated. It is a very, very simple process. As long as, till we get to that point of sincerity in us, and when one comes to that understanding that, that Krishna alone exists, everything else in this material world is temporary or false or whatever it is, at the end, that they are not our permanent associates. Our permanent relationship is only with Krishna. All other relationship is based on our material relationships. It's on material understanding. But one day, when the spirit soul is leaving this material body and it has to go back to its spiritual world, then the only associate that goes along with him is Krishna. So that is why Krishna consciousness is such a valuable thing. Kapila Vasudev instructed Devahuti Devi in this way. Atyayasakarani karma padalani acharya niryanmalani bhode bhakti padedava chuchitata mayam nikim tavadah klishtva tarkapade parandava vabur brahmakhyam anye punaschitta ardratvam hriday vijindya bahubi siddhyandi jamandareihi. That after many, 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 many births, that chitta ardratvam hridayihi, that when one's mind is so much intense or focused on Krishna, or so much attached to Krishna, chittardratvamradehi vijindya bahubai, that it can happen to him that the mind will become immediately, it loses all its stubbornness. Or in other words, it becomes so light-hearted that the devotees are normally very, very light-hearted. That is the nature of a devotee. They are not stone-hearted people. Why? Because this ardrada, ardrada means that liquefying nature of the mind has developed in their heart. Therefore, they are able to act like that. There are some people in this world, even if they want to cry, they can't cry. Why? Because their mind has become so solid rock like that. And there are people who think that it's a great quality to be like that, that I am so much, so strong in my mind. But for a devotional point of view, that is not considered to be the best situation. For a devotee, for one whose heart is more melting, or one whose heart is more relaxed in this relationship, that he is able to embrace Krishna wholeheartedly, That is the relationship required. That is why it says, Chittardretva Vridehi Vijindya Bahubi Siddhyandi Janmandarehi. That after many, many births, such a heart will start melting. That when one is engaged in Krishna service, Krishna eventually gives that understanding from inside. And when one comes to that relationship with Krishna in that form, automatically that relationship will develop in such a way that everything else in this material world becomes less significant. That is how the process of Bhakti Yoga works. It is a long topic, this Kavila Pradesham, Kavila's instructions to Devahuti Devi. So we'll have to discuss this in the next few lessons. I'll just read that chapter because it's only one chapter and this is the beginning of the Kavila Mani's instructions. Shavanago Vajam Kapila Sattva Sankhyadam Bhagavan Atma Mayayam Jada Swayamaja Sachal Atma Pratyantayinanam Nakhyasya Vashpana Kumsam Varyamna Sarva Yoginam Vishuddha Vishuddha Devasya Bhuri Drupyam Divesavaham Yadvidatte Bhagavan Swachanda Atma Atma Mayayam Tani Mesha Gadanasya Kirtanyanyani Virtayam Shri Sudha Vajam Dvaivayana Sagasteva Maitrayo Bhagavan Sada Prahedam Vidram Preda Anmi Kshikyam Prajodhidaha Shri Maitreya Vajam Pidari Prasthideya Nema Adupreja Girshaya Tasmin Bindu Sare Valsil Bhagavan Kavilakila Tamasi Namakarmanam Tattvam Agra Arga Darshanam Susudam Devahutyaha Dadu Samsmaradi Vajam Shri Devahuti Vajam Nurvinna Nidaram Bhuman Asad Indriya Darshanal Yena Sambhavyamayena Prapannandham Tamaprabho Tasyatvam Damasom Dasya Dushparasya Adya Bharagam Sachakshun Janmaya Amande Laddhamme Tadanubhyahan Ye Adyo Bhagavan Pumsam Ishwaro Vi Bhavan Kila Logasya Namasam Dasya Chakshuru Suvidya Mivodhinaha Atame Deva Samboham Abakrashtam Tamarhasi Yavagraho Hammamedi Etasmin Yojidasvayam Tam Tvam Gadaham Sharanam Sharanyam Sambhritya Samsara Garo Kutharam Jityasaya Hambhrakde Puru Purushasya Namami Sadharma Vidam Maritam Shri Maitreya Vajam Iti Samadur Niravadya Mipsidam Nishanna Vumsana Varga Vardhanam Diyavinandhi Alpodam Sadam Gadim Babasha Mishal Smita Shobhidananah Shri Bhagavan Vajam Yoga Madhya Alpiyya Pumsam Madho Nishraya Sayame Atyandu Varadir Yatra Dukkasyanya Sukhasyanyam Tammi Mande Pravakshyami Yama Vajam Puranahi Krishinam Shodugamanam Yogam Sarvangamayipunam Chedakhalvasya Bandhaya Muktaye Jalpanomadam Guneshu Saktam Bandhaya Radam Va Pumsi Muktaye Aham Nama Abhimanotel Kamalobad Birmalai Vidam Yadamana Shuddham Adukkama Sukham Samam Tada Purusham Alpanam Kevalam Prakudeparam Nirandaram Sayam Jodhi Animanam Akhandidam Jnana Vairaga Yuktena Bhakti Yuktena Jalpana Parivashyatyuda Sinam Prakudim Jahadavujasam Mayujyamanaya Bhaktya Bhagavata Hilalpani Sadrushavosti Shiva Pantha Yoginam Brahma Siddhaye Prasangam Ajaram Bhasham Atmanakavayo Vido Sa Eva Sadhu Shukrudo Mokshadvaram Abhavdudam Titikshava Karuniya Suhurda Sarvadehinam Ajana Shatram Shanda Sadhava Sadhabushanaha Mayinanyena Bhavena Bhaktim Kurvandi Endridam Malkrane Tektakarmanam Tektasudhina Bhantavam Madashaya Kaya Amrishta Shunam Nikadhyam Nija Tapam Nivivida Sava Naidan Madhya Jedasaha Ta Ede Sadhava Sadhvi Sarva Sangha Vivar Jiraha Sangha Ste Shudhane Pratya Sangha Dau Shahara Ahire Sadam Prasangha Anmama Virya Samvido Bhavan Nihil Karna Rasayinaha Kathaha Tajoshanadashu Abhavargavar Pani Shraddharadar Bhakti Nenu Kamishani Bhakti Abhuman Jada Virada Maindriyam Drishta Shudha Atmadraja Anuchindayam Chittasayato Grahane Yoga Yukto Yadishare Khrujumir Yoga Margayihi An asevayayam prithver gunanam Yanyanyo vaira agyam jambidena Yogena mai arpidaya jamatya Maam pratyagatmanam yoha avirandhi Shri Devahudrivajam Kajitva yuvajit utri yujida bhakti Kirashima gochara Eapadam dingruvanam anjasa Anyashnavamaham Yo yogo bhagavilbhavam Murvanatmam stoyodira Kidushakari jangani yattastatva avabhodanam Tadidanmi vijani hiyadaham Andadir hare sukham Buddhiyadurbhodam yosha bhodanubhihal Shri Maitreya Vajam Vididhaptam Kabiloma Adulitham Jadasneho Yatradanyo Abhijada Tattvam Nayam Yal Pradandi Sakhyam Pravajave Bhakti Vidane Yogam Shri Bhagavan Vajam ദേവാനാം ഗുണലിംഗാനാം ദേവാനാം ഗുണലിംഗാനാം അനുശ്രയാർമണം സത്വമേവൈകം നസോവൃത്തി സ്വഭാവികേതുയാ അനിമിത്ത ഭഗവതി ഭക്തി സിദ്ധേ ഗരീയസി ജരയത്യ അശുയാ കോശം നികീർണ മനലോ യഥാം നൈകാത്മനാം മേ സ്പൃഹയന്തി ഗേജിൽ മൻപാദ സേവാഭിരതാമധീഹ യേന്യോന്യദേവ ഭഗവത പ്രസജ്യ സഭാജയന്തേ മമ പൗരുഷാണി പശ്യന്തി രേമേരുചിരാണ്യംബസന്ന പ്രസന്നമത്ര അരുണലോചനാനി രൂപാണി ദിവ്യാനി വരപ്രദാനി സാഗം വാചം സ്പൃഹണീയം വദന്തി തൈർദർശനീയാവൈരുദാരം വിലാസഹാസേക്ഷിത വാമസൂക്തൈ ഹൃദാത്മനോ ഹൃദപ്രാണാം ശമക്തിരനിച്ഛതോമേ ഇതി മന്യും പ്രയുക്തേ അധോ വിഭൂതിം മമായാ വിനസ്തം ഐശ്വര്യമഷ്ടാംഗമനുപ്രവർത്തം ശ്രീയം ഭാഗവതീം വാ സ്പൃഹയം ദിവദ്രാം പരസ്യ മേരേ ശ്രീമതേ ലോകേ നകർഹിജിൽ മത്പരാശാന്തരൂപേ നംക്ഷന്തി നോമേ നിമിഷോ ലേഢീരി യേഷാമഹം പ്രിയ ആത്മാ സുതശ്ച സഖ ഗുരു സുഹൃദോ ദൈവനിഷ്ഠം ഇമം ലോകം തദൈവാം ഉമാത്മാനുഭയായിനം ആത്മാനാനുയേചേഹ ഏരായ പശവോ ഗൃഹാം വിസൃജ്യം സർവാനന്യാംശ മാമ്യോം വിശദോമഹം വചന്യനന്യയാ ഭക്ത്യാ താൻ മൃത്യോരധിപാരയേ നാന്യത്ര മത്ഭഗവത പ്രധാന പുരുഷേശ്വരാൻ ആത്മാന സർവഭൂതാനാം ഭയം തീവ്രം നിവർത്തതേ മദ്ഭയാദ്വാദി വാദോയം സൂര്യസ്തപതി മൽഭയാൽ വർഷദീന്ദ്രോദഹത്യഗ്നി മൃത്യുശ്ചരതി മൽഭയാൽ ജ്ഞാനവൈരാഗ്യയുക്തേന ഭക്തിയോഗേന യോഗിന ക്ഷേമായ പാദമൂലം മേ പ്രവിശ്യൻ രഘുതോ ഭയം ഏതാമനേവ ലോകേസ്മിൻ പുംസാം നിശ്രേയസോദയ തീവ്രേണ ഭക്തിയോഗേന മനോ മയ്യർപ്പിതം സ്ഥിരം ഇത് ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതി മഹാപുരാണി തൃതീയ സ്കന്ധേ കാപിലയോ ഭാഖ്യാനി പഞ്ചവിംശോധ്യായാം. സോ ദിസ് വാസ് ദി ചാപ്റ്റർ വി ആർ ഡിസ്കസിംഗ് ടുഡേ. ആൻഡ് ഇഫ് ദേർസ് എനി ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻസ് ഓർ കമന്റ്സ് പ്ലീസ്.
You know, you mentioned in your class earlier on about Karma One living home.
Yeah.
How does that apply now that in terms of, I mean, that was in such a way, but this is mm-hmm. different yugas.
Yeah. Well,
what would that apply to restrict brahmacharis and sannyasis?
Well, the this is the story of Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi. As you see, it has happened in the Satyuga. Of course, in the Kaliyuga, all these things may not happen, and it will just like when should one take sannyas? This question comes. That generally people say at the age of 50 one should take sannyas and go. This is the normal concept of sannyas ashram. The ideal situation is, or in other words, sometimes vairagyam is the qualification of becoming a sannyasi, or a detachment or renunciation from this world. That's what eventually makes a person to move on to sannyas ashram. So if that degree of detachment or renunciation has not happened to a person, and if he takes to sannyas ashram, it will be a disturbance in the society. It will always happen. You can see many instances it has happened in the past, that when one is not fully had the realization from one's life that material life is not material life is to be given up, that attachment hasn't, but the still attachment remains, in which case the sannyas ashram will be a disturbance for him as well as for the society. And then these subtle desires which keeps coming in all the time disturbing him even while in that saffron cloth is not very good, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's life, you can see that how strict he was about sannyas ashram, that he did not want that people abuse that saffron cloth any time. And unless one has come to that degree of renunciation, one should not move on to that ashram till he should stay in that position where he is. So Krishna also says in the Bhagavatam about sannyas ashram. And Krishna's explanation is much more interesting than anybody else. Krishna says, Venubhir Nabhavir Yati. In other words, if you take a bamboo stick, you are not going to become a sannyasi. In other words, just because you carry a danda, you are not a sannyasi. That's Krishna's word. Now when Krishna says there is something more fun in there. Why? Because Krishna took this bamboo flute in the hand, and what happened? So many gopis came listening to Krishna. So in a joking way, he is talking about that sannyasa ashram is not in the dress or not in the carrying a danda. It is that person's consciousness, that if he has that desired renunciation in him, degree of renunciation, detachment to this material world, or so much focused on the spiritual world, that becomes his last ashram. And if you don't make it in that, then you have to come back and accept another body again. That's what Krishna says. So it's something one has to consider oneself when he does that very carefully and come to that conclusion before he should go ahead with that or not. So, but as far as Kardama Prajavati's life with Devahuti is concerned, they had no problem like that, because Kardama Prajavati was going to leave home even before. He had that realization in him even before he married Devahuti Devi. Devahuti Devi was married only because Krishna instructed that he should marry her and live a householder life. That is how he got into householder life. So, and the agreement with Krishna was that after the children were born, he will leave home and go away. And so it's a different, they couldn't compare that with the people of this world today. It's just only to give us the understanding that this was Satyayugam. Satyayugam was like this, and people had that consciousness of living a spiritual life in its fullest extent. Whereas in our case, we have how much attachments we have, and how much difficult it is to break all these attachments away. It's easier to say than done.
Question.
I will first talk about that Pingala story, because that's what you raised last time.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned to you that you have to read that again in the Bhagavatam. I understood the problem afterwards. I looked at that. In the Bhagavatam, when Pingala story is mentioned, it says like this: Ashahi paramam dukham, nairashyam paramam sukham. Then it says there, you have to remember who is speaking this. This is spoken by Krishna himself. Krishna is talking about this Pingala's story. So Pingala, on that particular evening when this incident happened, as you read in the Bhagavatam, that at some point her renunciation came to that high degree. She realized, what am I doing here? And it was the very same evening Atreya Maharshi came there. So when Atreya Maharshi came there, Pingala was standing outside the house, and Pingala mentioned to Atreya Maharshi, Atreya wanted to sit there outside her house on a small a bench or something like that. He wanted to sit there. So he asked her permission, knowing well that it is her house. Pingala asked him, when will you leave the house? Because she had her business to go on there, which she was continuously doing there. So she asked Dattatreya Maharshi, and you have to see Atreya Maharshi's consciousness at that time. Atreya Maharshi was already so realized that he saw through this Pingala's consciousness and said to her, the reply is also very, very good. He said to her that when it gets bright, I will leave. This is how he answered her. In other words, if I sleep in the street, it is possible that I could get struck by a vehicle, bullock cart or something, and I could get killed. And his answer to her was that, I need somewhere I have to keep this body for the night, because this body is a very valuable thing. He's telling her all these things, because this body has been given to me for going back to Godhead. That's my purpose of this material body I have. And I don't want to destroy it in the street because of my carelessness. So I have to sleep somewhere tonight. As soon as it's bright in the morning, I will leave this place. This is what he said to her. Now, actually what he meant by saying that was that when light comes to your heart, I will leave. Because as far as Dattatreya is concerned, that place was not so important that he had to stay there. But it was his mercy to her that he decided to give her this special benediction, that my association with you, you will never become, it will never be wasted. In other words, that slightest desire for renunciation, detachment, came to her the moment she got this association with Dattatreya Maharshi. Dattatreya was a very, very personality. And that is why, that as soon as she allowed him to stay there, and she went back to her room in the house, she realized this, that what did that sage tell me? What did that sage tell me? Because it started knocking in her mind. What did he call me? He has called me as mother. That is how he addressed her. No one in my life has called me once as mother, because that was the life I was leading. There is no possibility that someone else will call me as a mother again. But he has called me as a mother, and the words he spoke made a lot of sense to me. And thinking from that thought, her thought developed further. And not only developed further, it focused on Lord Ramchandra's thoughts came to her, because from Madhvithila, automatically Sita Devi's and Lord Ramchandra's thoughts were so strong in her heart that Sukham Sushwava Pingala, that is the words used in the Bhagavatam, that Pingala slept off very nicely. It never says that she has gone back, you know. But the sages have a way of speaking things like this. This is the problem. All the great sages, they speak like this. They will not speak openly things. First of all, any commentaries, if you take Srimad Bhagavatam and look about this, all the commentators have more than guaranteed that Pingala has gone back to the spiritual world. One reason, Krishna will not quote a personality who has just led a normal material life. That will not come from Krishna. Krishna's quotations, if Krishna is quoting somebody as a spiritual authority, that will be a person who is back in the spiritual world, not otherwise. Secondly, the sages have a nature always that when they say things like this, they will say something and leave it there. And they expect the person who is reading it to understand that. Because when Bhagavatam was compiled and Bhagavatam was spoken, the consciousness of the people was such that they were able to understand these things without sufficient explanation to it. In the Bhagavatam, there are so many places like this. It is left at some point and they leave it up to the reader to read, understand, or to take the help of the commentators who have commented on this. There are so many examples like that. And it is not unusual in Sanskrit literature also. This is quite common. There is Kalidas poet who wrote a book known as Kumara Sambhavam. Kumara Sambhavam is a very great literature, like he is our Shakespeare in Sanskrit, isn't it? So he wrote Kumara Sambhavam, Raghuvamsham, Vikramavamsham. There are so many great literature he has compiled. In this Kumara Sambhavam, it is the story of Lord Shiva, Parvati and her children. That is the birth of Kartikeya, the second son. Eldest was Ganesh and second was Kartikeya. So while this book is about his birth, about Kartikeya's birth, but in the book, if you read, and it is a massive book, it's about a few thousand pages, this whole Kumara Sambhavam. If you read Kumara Sambhavam, nowhere there is mentioned about the birth of Kartikeya. It's mentioned as such that at the end, it is left like that, that it is up to you to understand that Kartikeya was born after this marriage of... the whole background is presented in the book. But it is expected that the reader will understand it like that. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, when Krishna took the form of Mohini, you will see in this 8th canto of Bhagavatam, you will see the story there. When the milk ocean was churned, and eventually there was this incident that Srinarayana Maharshi went and reported this incident of Krishna taking this dress of Mohini and went and reported this in Kailas to Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva wanted to see this form, and he came with Sri Parvati and Ganesh and everybody to Vaikuntha planet. When he came there, Krishna was resting there in Mahavishnu form. He was resting there, and obviously he received Lord Shiva very nicely, and they exchanged their, they inquired each other about their welfare and all that, like I mentioned the Bhagavatam. And eventually, Krishna asked Lord Shiva what was the purpose of the visit. And Shiva said to Krishna that, I heard from Nagamani that you have taken this form of a Mohini. I would like to see that form, he said to her. Krishna, Shiva said to Krishna, Krishna said, it will cause problem for you if you see that form. It's going to disturb your mind. Lord Shiva said that there is no question of me getting disturbed. You know that who I am. And one word of Lord Shiva is Sthanuman. Sthanuman means who can sit like a pillar, who never moves. That is his yogi position. And by austerities and penances, he has become such a powerful personality. If Lord Shiva starts falling down, what chance have we got for falling down is concerned? But so Lord Shiva was so confident that he said to Krishna that I have no possibility of anything happening to me. He said, all I am telling you is that it will disturb those people's mind who has not able to control them. And later on you see there that Krishna, as soon as he changed to the form of Mohini, and Krishna started following her all along the universe, they ran around. And eventually, at one point, Lord Shiva suddenly came to his senses. What have I done? I have been running after women, even forgetting that Shiva Parvati was there and the children were there. And he felt so upset about it that he started crying. Lord Shiva was crying at that stage. And Mohini Devi immediately changed her dress and appeared in Krishna's form and consoled him that you have not done anything wrong. After all, you have not lost your celibacy, because celibacy means brahmachari life. What is brahmachari? Brahmachari means one who is going after Brahman. He is a brahmachari. And Mohini is nobody else than Brahman itself, so you don't have to worry about it. And eventually Lord Shiva was consoled by Krishna in that form. And in the Bhagavatam there is no reference that there was another reunion between Shiva and Krishna in that Mohini form. From that relationship a child was born. Krishna wanted to enjoy the motherhood. And in that, like Krishna took the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to enjoy the mood of the gopis, Krishna has taken different forms at different times to enjoy different relationships. And Krishna took the form of this motherhood and enjoyed what is motherhood like. And a child was born from that relationship. Sri Shukan never said this to Parikshit Maharaj when he explained in the Bhagavatam. Why? Because it was understood from that relationship naturally. When the relationship happens between the great personalities, a child has to be born from that. And that child is known as Shastra. Shastra is that child. All the other Puranas refer to that. But Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't even mention about it. So like this, there are so many things in the Bhagavatam where we require the help of the commentators. Because they see through these things much more than, because we are used to reading things in black and white. Only that we understand. Because our thought process is not developed in that way to understand. And that is what happened in Pingla's case also. Pingla was actually gone back to the spiritual world. But without saying that, Sri Shivan stopped it there itself and moved on to me immediately to the next spiritual master. He started discussing that. So that's just the way the Srimad Bhagavatam is. And we need always this. That is why we need to read through other commentaries also to understand that what was, because this is why Sridharacharya Swamiji's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, it is for this reason known. Things which we don't understand when you read Bhagavatam, if you refer to Sridharacharya's commentary, you'll find there answers to many, many things like that. I mean, things like in the 10th canto, there are so many things in the 10th canto which Krishna's pastimes are related to. And these pastimes are sometimes very, very hard to because our mind is not trained to think like that. And in that situation, the great devotees, they refer to these commentaries from Sridharacharya Swamiji and so many others like that.
Was
the
incarnation of
Shastra? Yes, it was a son born from, he is known as Dharma Shastra. Actually, he is one of the demigods.
Okay.
And it says there, in the, I think it is in the Brahmavarta Puran, it says about that Krishna coming in the form of mother holding this little boy, and Shiva is the father walking down. Sri Parvati wanted to take the boy and hug him and look after him. So that scene, there are so many nice scenes like that in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The different pastimes what Krishna has done at different times. And so he was given a special responsibility that He is one of the demigods who has the opportunity to serve Krishna in different temples. Many, many large temples there is sometimes he is also worshipped along with Krishna. Krishna has so many expansions. All these demigods are coming from Krishna. Krishna is the origin of everything. And Krishna's ways of... that is why when a realization comes to a devotee that everything except Krishna, nothing exists in this world, that is a perfect realization. And that is the point when I understand, I was talking about this devotee, that she's seeing that everything in relationship with Krishna. At the moment, in our conditioned state, we see everything separate from Krishna. We see all living entities are individuals and they have their own, but in reality, they are part and parcels of Krishna. And Krishna's Maya is working in this world, which is showing us that the material energy, how powerful it is. So we'll stop there. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Samsara Sagare Magnam Dinam Mam Karunanidhe Karmam Grahya Grihitangam Mamuddhara Bhavarnaval Srimal Bhagavadakhyam Pratyaksha Krishna Vahi Sri Gralo Simayanadha Muktyartam Bhavasagare Manoradhe Madiyoyam Sabhala Sarvadatvaya Narvigne Neiva Kartavyam Dasoham Tavakeshavam Bhave Bhave Yada Bhakti Padayor Stava Jayade Tadha Purushva Devesha Nathastvam No Yada Prabho Nama Sangetanam Yasya Sarva Baba Pranashanam Pranamo Dukha Shamanam Tam Namami Harim Param Janmadhyasya Yato Nvayadi Daradas Chate Shvabhitnya Swaral Tene Brahma Hrida Ya Adigavaye Muhyandiyal Suraya Tejo Vari Mridam Yatha Vinimayo Yatra Trisargo Mrishadhamna Svena Sada Nirastra Kuhagam Satyam Param Dhimahi Dharma Projida Kaida Votra Varamo Nirmal Saranam Sadam Vedyam Vastavamatra Vastu Shivadam Tavatrayon Mulanam Srimal Bhagavade Mahamunikrade Kimvapare Ishvara Sadyo Hridya Varudhya Detra Kridibhi Shushroshubhi Talshanal Nigamagalpadaror Galidam Halam Shugamukhadam Rudhadrava Samyudam Pipada Bhagavadam Rasamalayam Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavukaha Sachidananda Rubayam Vishwalpatyadi Hedave Tavatraya Vinashaya Shri Krishnaya Vayam Numam Yam Praprajandam Anubedam Abedakrityam Dvaivayano Virahakadarama Juhava Putredi tanmayadaya taravobhinedu tam sarvabhudakhadayam munim anadosmi. Yaswanubhava.